Hello and welcome to the Property Roundup here on iProperty Radio with myself, Carol Tallon, the show where we chat to industry experts to get a view on activity on the ground and to learn about new trends emerging. This show is sponsored by daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by returning guest, John McCartney, Director and Head of Research with BNP Paribas. John, you're very welcome back. Thank you for joining me again today.
My pleasure, Carol. Always a pleasure.
John, you have become something of my oracle for commercial property, and the latest stats that you've shared were pretty shocking. So I should probably say very stark. So you might just take us through the latest findings for commercial real estate in Ireland.
Yeah, certainly, Carol. So we've just really received and compiled the investment statistics for Q1. And just for the avoidance of doubt, what we're talking about here is the trading of income-producing tenanted properties across a range of sectors, including shops and offices, which were traditionally the biggest sectors, and apartments and alternatives like creches and things like that. So it covers the gamut. And I think the big takeaway from Q1 was that a fairly lackluster 2023 has continued, and probably in fact has become even more downbeat in Q1. It was a very quiet quarter. To put the numbers on it, we had just over 160 million euro of assets changing hands between January and the end of March. And to put that in context, over the last 10 years, the quarterly average has been well over a billion. So it's 85% below the quarterly average for the last 10 years. And we have to remember, of course, that you know, the last 10 years have seen quite a lot of turbulence and challenges as well, you know, because we had Brexit during that period and we've had COVID, obviously, which was very disruptive. So I think you used the word stark, Carol, and I think that does put it in context. It has been a stark quarter.
Yeah, and normally when we see something like, a drop in activity of, you know, an average of 85%, usually we might qualify that by saying something like, oh, it's coming off a high base. But actually, when you document a decade, 10 years of turbulence, essentially, then actually we're comparing this with a fairly challenged time as well. So in terms of the Q1 stats, is that what you had expected?
It really is, yeah. I think there are no surprises, really. You hope for a little bit of a tailwind in Q1 because Q4 is traditionally the biggest quarter of the year for deals getting done, and then inevitably some of them don't quite make it by the 31st of December and they slip into Q1 and you get a little bit of a lift from that. But even notwithstanding that, It as I say, was a very quiet quarter, and it was broadly expected.
So let's break it down, because you talked about these statistics are based across a range of income producing assets. So let's break it down maybe by sector as you see fit there. But let's start by talking about the office, because that's just so interesting at the moment. It's so not just controversial, but I mean, there's a sense of uncertainty about how people are going to use offices in the future. So maybe break down the office market if you can.
Yeah, absolutely, Carol. So, I mean, across all of the sectors, you know, property values are ultimately a function of yields, which are set in capital markets, and rents, which are set in the occupational market. And there is the old saying, you know, that the occupational market sets the rent and the capital markets set the multiple. And that's the case here. So if we look at the individual sectors, our focus then is on the occupational market. And offices is one of those sectors that is facing quite a challenged occupational market. Again, it looks like we've had under 18,000 square meters of take up in Q1. So that is very low by historical standards. Over a 10-year period, the annual level of take up in the Dublin office market has been around 240,000 square meters. So to do 18,000 in the first quarter of the year is a very sluggish start, and it really is the continuation of the trend that we saw really throughout 2023 and indeed the latter half of 2022. And I think there's really two main reasons for this. The first reason is that the tech sector, which was such a big driver of demand for office space in Dublin, has really gone asleep in terms of office leasing. So again, just to put some numbers in place for context, between 2017 and 2021, the tech sector accounted for over 50% of all the office space that was leased in Dublin. But there was a bit of a watershed moment, sort of August, September 2022, when we had this tech wreck, when the NASDAQ suddenly came under pressure, the valuation of these tech companies came under scrutiny, and they all very quickly moved to implement cost-saving measures, including headcount reductions and so forth. And that has impacted Ireland as well. And I think there's two sides to it. The first thing is, the headcount reductions have a mechanical impact on the amount of office demand because, you know, you instead of growing the number of people working in the sector, which had been the case throughout that period of 2017 through to the first half of 2022. And during that time, tech companies were not only leasing space to meet the requirements to accommodate their existing staff, but they were also leasing space ahead of time to meet the anticipated growth in their headcounts. So that has stopped. And in fact, employment in the sector is back about 4% year on year. So there has been a pullback in tech employment. The other thing, of course, is that intangible of sort of sentiment. Tech companies have, I think, become reluctant to do anything that is associated with extravagance or loose budgetary management. And in that sense, leasing fancy large offices has just kind of gone out of fashion for the tech sector for now. And that's a global phenomenon, but Dublin is sort of feeling the draft from that side of it as well. So that really is the first headwind for the office leasing market. And the second headwind is remote working or hybrid working. And obviously, the COVID pandemic was a game changer because it proved the concept of remote working, and it demonstrated that the technologies that are available to us are robust and fit for purpose. And so the immediate impact of COVID was a spike in certainly service sector employees working from home. That spike has now retreated, and I have some statistics on it, Carol, if you bear with me.
Honest, it would be great to see some statistics because actually, you know, one of the things I know you and I discussed it before, and I tend to talk about it frequently here, but the sentiment even around remote working is changing both from the employer and the employee. It's a really interesting. It's an interesting time. I feel like a year ago we said, this is a open conversation. This conversation, you know, is really only getting started. And I feel like I don't know if we're much closer to understanding what the end result will be. So I think actually looking at the stats is a good place to start so we can at least understand. I mean, are we a year off even establishing a baseline?
Well, I think we have in a way we've seen a sort of a stabilization. So let me just set out the basis for what I'm going to say. So every country in the EU has to do a labor force survey. That's a requirement from Eurostat. And in Ireland, the quarterly labor force survey, in fact, this happens all across Europe. They all ask this these questions on remote working. And so there are two questions. The first question that's asked to employees who are selected, or sorry, households that are selected for the labour force survey is, firstly, in the last 4 weeks, did you do any work from home? And if you answer yes to that question, it passes you through then to a follow-up question, which is, okay, you've done some work from home. Did you do more than half of your working time from home or less than half of your working time from home? So having established the origin of the data, what we can say is that the proportion of people that were working from home at least some of the time, it peaked in 2021. So I'm just looking at the figures here. 44% of people were reporting that they worked sometimes or usually at home in Q1 2021. So right at the start of 2021. Now, that figure retreated as the economy reopened. And it had gone down to about 33% by Q3 2022, and it has now stabilized at that level. So at first glance, I think a reasonable narrative would be, okay, there was a spike in remote working when COVID struck. That has sort of retreated as the economy reopened after COVID, and now we've reached a steady state of people that are now going to be working from home forever, and that's just the way it's going to be, because it has remained more or less exactly stable at around 33% for the last 15 months. But the nuance within the data is that the proportion that is reporting that it's working from home usually, that's more than half of their working time, has gone down over the last 15 months from about 25 to 20%, whereas the proportion that is sometimes working from home has gone up commensurately by 5 percentage points from about 9% to about 14%.
That's interesting in itself. So we can see that for those usually working, that's coming down, which means that they are going back to the workforce or workplace more than they maybe anticipated, or certainly more than they were at the previous survey.
Yeah, if I can attempt to summarize that convoluted explanation, Carol, I think what we what we're now seeing is that the number of people working from home has stabilized, but they are now working fewer and fewer days from home. That seems to be a continuing trend. So they're migrating from the usually category to the sometimes category.
In
layman's language, that means they're moving from 3 days a week or more to 2 days a week or fewer.
That's interesting. And it's particularly interesting for me in the context of conversations I've had with estate agents up and down the West Coast only in the last week. And, you know, we talked a lot about corporate lettings, where we're seeing, you know, for example, Limerick Chamber have a really interesting report, and they were showing that that almost 20% of the employers that they spoke to had some housing intervention on behalf of employees. So in some cases, that was just putting them in touch with an estate agent. In others, it was actually renting a property for their employees. But that seemed like an exceptionally high stat operating kind of in the Midwest. But actually, when I spoke to estate agents up and down the West Coast, I was hearing some really interesting things. And particularly, I'm thinking a conversation I had with Tommy Carmody of Tommy Carmody's Property House. And he spoke about people who were renting or potentially buying or looking at buying. And he talked about those people using language to him like, oh, we've been called back to Dublin, or we've been told that this hybrid working or remote working is only in place for the next year, and then a decision will be made. And then they're essentially being put on notice that they might, again, the language is, be called back to Dublin. And that tells me that actually we still maybe don't know the baseline of where remote work, where it will land. You know, if in a year's time more companies decide that they want people working in the workplace a large portion of the time, you know, how is that going to impact people maybe who have made moves, and are we going to look at people leaving the workforce? So actually, just the Irish Examiner this week had an interesting report of or an interesting news item on a report that was carried out that actually was talking about Irish firms' desires to get workers back to the workplace could delay gender equality by a generation. Now, I don't know, is that scaremongering or is that the reality, or is there a genuine fear that you know, hybrid work did kind of shatter the 9-to-5 paradigm, and that actually, if we take that away, it really will result in, I their language was, you know, the biggest female brain drain we've seen from the workplace. And I don't know, is that speculation or is that based on reality? You know, when you're looking across the office markets and you're trying to get a sense of, well, can you get a measure of sentiment at this level of nuance?
Yeah, it's really anecdotal, Carol, and that I think is the virtue of looking at the hard data that we have, because it has been at times a low quality debate, and it has been
Yeah.
colonized by people that have their own agendas that they're trying to advance, and very often, as assertively as they make their points, when you scratch the surface, there hasn't been a lot of substance behind it. So I think, look, it. From what I can see in the data, it does seem that there is some sense that the number of days that people are at home is maybe continuing to edge down, but still in all, the whole concept of working at least partially from home seems to be stable. That seems to be the way that the stats are moving. And the truth, I suppose, will only really come out when the labor market weakens, and when unemployment goes up, you can imagine then that employers will feel confident to assert the whip hand, and at that point, I think we will have a better understanding of whether this is going to be with us forever or whether it is a phase. And I think nobody really knows the answer to that at this point. But for now, what we can say, Carol, in terms of office demand, and circling back to the two key challenges to the occupational market for offices, the first one was the tech wreck, the lingering effects of which are still impacting office demand in Dublin. The second is the remote working, or the working from home. The impact that it has really manifests itself through the office space per employee ratio. And if we were to sort of go back to the beginning of 2012 and measure the relationship between office consumption and jobs growth, over the period 2012 to 2019, every new job was associated with about 10.2 square meters of office space consumption, every service sector job in Dublin. If we recalculate that post-COVID, the number goes down to 3.2 square meters. So you can see what has happening. We've actually had, very robust jobs growth since quarter one 2020. But it hasn't been matched by very strong office absorption, and the reason for that most likely is remote working. And I suppose the question that we asked about whether remote working is here to stay really comes down to, for people that are involved in the office property business, it really comes down to this space per employee ratio. Is it going to move back towards the 10 square meters per new job, or is it going to stay anchored at 3.2? And we just don't know the answer to that. But based on the statistics I'm looking at, I think it does look as if the 3.2 is likely to creep up gradually. That seems to be, and that will be good for office demand, because we have an oversupplied office market at the moment. Based on the office schemes that are about to complete in Dublin or have recently completed, I think by the end of 2025, the market will be even more oversupplied. I think there will be excess vacancy at that point of somewhere between 250 and 270,000 square meters of space. That is vacancy above and beyond 11% of stock, which has tended to be a sort of a balanced market. And then it's really just a mechanical question, you know, if you've 250,000 square meters of office stock overhanging the market at the end of 2025, how many jobs do you need to absorb that? Well, if the absorption rate is three square meters per person, you'd need nearly 80,000 jobs to absorb it. If the absorption rate goes back to 10 square meters per person, you'd need 25,000 jobs. And it's really as simple as that.
But there's a huge difference between those two figures. So when we look at that, kind of the former 10.2 square meters compared to the current 3.2 square meters, are they Irish specific stats? And the reason I ask is that I'm conscious that BNP Paribas is a global brand. So are there lessons that Ireland needs to be learning from other jurisdictions?
Yeah, so these trends, actually, we're seeing them across Europe, Carol. I think the particular impact that the tech wreck has had has been greater on the Dublin market than elsewhere. So office take-up in Dublin fell by about 50% last year, which was more than across the whole of Europe, which was down about 20%. One of the factors that has caused this is common to all jurisdictions, whereas one of the factors, the tech reliance, is a particularly relevant factor in Dublin, because we such a high weighting of our office take-up was by tech firms.
Bringing us back to the report, and we talked about kind of the total investment spend in Q1, 161.7 million. Obviously, you're looking across the range of income producing properties. Stepping away from the office market, in that total spend, was there any category that actually was performing on par with what you would expect, or as it had in previous quarters? So, you know, taking maybe the biggest loser out of that, were there any steadily performing categories?
Not really, Carol. And so I'm going to be a little bit pedantic and say all of the sectors are performing broadly as expected.
Okay.
You know, because the occupational markets in the commercial space are challenged, and in the residential space the potential upside of rental growth isn't available because of the rent controls that we have. So everything is broadly as expected. I mean, I think we can rationalize what's going on, and we go back to where we began the conversation by saying, look, values are the product really of rents, which are set in the occupational market, and yields, which come from the capital markets. And when interest rates go up, property yields have to go up as well. And there's really two reasons for that. Firstly, geared investors can't pay as much, mm-hmm. because they're not able to borrow as much. And secondly, and the cost of finance, of course, increases. And secondly, then, you know, if the risk-free rate of return rises, and you want to, obviously, you know, very steady eddy safe investments become competitive with commercial property returns, unless commercial property yields also go up to compensate for that, because nobody's going to take the risk and illiquidity of investing in a commercial property on board when they can get the same return by buying a government bond. It just wouldn't make sense to do that. So we know that the market is challenged on both sides. From the capital markets, interest rates have gone up, and when that happens, property yields have to move out, and it's an iron law. And then on the occupational market side, we've talked about offices. Retail, really the occupational market for retail has been challenged for quite some time. And, you know, there has been more aggressive repricing of retail assets to reflect that. That repricing process has advanced further, I would say, in the case of retail. And as a result of that, retail accounted for 43% of the action in Q1. So I think that is positive. But still in all, if we go back to MSCI data for Q4, the Q1 data aren't out yet. But capital values in retail are still falling as well, you know, so it's not necessarily the case that we've reached the bottom for retail assets either. That repricing process may have further to run. But I think what we can say with certainty is that the retail sector has been under duress for a longer period under pressure. And as a result of that, vendors' expectations have become, I think, more realistic than is the case for office vendors. And so there's, as a result, buyers are responding to that. And there's a perception, particularly in the regions and particularly in certain sectors like neighborhood shopping, that there is value out there. What we're also seeing, I think, interestingly, is that, you know, on the streets around Grafton Street in Dublin, you know, Wicklow Street, South Ann Street, those streets and Grafton Street itself, there actually has been more trading in the last 12 months than we've had for years and years. And partly, I think that is a perception that maybe we are now getting to the point where there is a bit of value in some of those assets. And also, I think there has been more available supply of assets to buy. And that really, I think, reflects a change in attitude of the big institutional investors that had those assets locked up for a long time and weren't selling. I think they're now increasingly beginning to view that form of retail as non-core, and they're making them available to purchase for the first time in a long time.
Just speaking of the Grafton Street, I think we were tracking some of the vacancy along there, and I think we're down to our last vacant unit, which I understand is under negotiation right now. So that's been really a core transformation there. John, before we finish up today, I am reminded of the last time you and I spoke, and I think how you put it to me was that things were going to get worse before they got better. But you said something to me that really stuck in my mind, and that was that the industry sometimes can be a little slow to recognize when things are on a downward slope, you know, a little bit slow, but they can similarly be a little bit slow to recognize, you know, maybe when we are starting to see the signs of positive. So on that basis, you know, where do you think we are now in that dip, and what are your expectations of the market over the next 12 to 24 months, knowing that we're coming into some really uncertain political times?
Yeah, no, absolutely, Carol. Well, I think there's suppose mixed news, really. You know, I mean, you're absolutely correct to say that investors do overbuy, and then they oversell during a downturn. So there will be opportunities, and there are in every cycle for astute investors that are well advised to pick up assets at low prices, and that will be the case again this time. In terms of the outlook, I think a lot depends on interest rates. And, you know, I suppose we're estate agents, and as much as I'm an economist, there are specialists who are working in financial markets that are looking at this stuff every day. And it does seem to be the case that there is now a market expectation that we will have some interest rate cuts this year. And that should, in turn, take pressure off yields and allow yields to move in after a lag. So I would expect that that will support values as we move into 2025. So that would be a positive, I think, coming from capital markets. On the occupational market side, I think it's less positive, certainly for offices. As I said earlier, I think we're going to reach peak vacancy around the end of 2025. I don't think it will be a massive peak in vacancy. I think it's actually quite manageable. However, How long it takes for that overhang to get digested will really depend on working patterns and working from home. And I think we'll just have to wait and see. The other thing that could help there is that the tech sector, which we know to be a really agile sector, it can turn on a sixpence. And, you know, as we were saying, tech office leasing has gone out of fashion for tech firms, but that can change very quickly and may do at some point over the next 12 or 18 months. On the retail side, there, I think, is an increasing perception that there is value available, but the yield hunters will be quite discriminate about where they're looking for value, and they will be chasing, I imagine, regional assets where the footfall is well supported by local chimney pots and there's good population and vibrant footfall. And so I think we will see, well-anchored regional shopping centres continue to be in demand. I think we'll see neighbourhood schemes that are located in densely populated neighbourhoods continue to be in demand. And maybe in Dublin, if the pricing repricing process continues, we might see more activity on the high streets as well.
Okay, John, that's a great summation of it. And I think the repricing is interesting in the context of what you're talking about happened in retail and if we'll see that filter down across the other sectors. So I think that's a particularly interesting one. And I suppose in relation to tech, I did see a stat that actually I think Q1 this year was the first quarter since 2012 that fintech didn't take up space. And that in itself is telling, considering that is the tech success story of Dublin as well. So thank you so much for joining me today. As always, I genuinely appreciate you kind of going through the nuance within the data, because I think that's sometimes what's lacking from the industry conversation that we have. So I always appreciate when you take the time to do that. Thank you so much. That was John McCartney, Director and Head of Research with BNP Paribas. Also, my thanks to Katie Talnant, production team at Hear Me Roar Media. And our huge thanks, of course, to our show sponsor, daft.ie, Ireland's most visited property website. And thank you indeed for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next episode of the Property Roundup. In the meantime, please be sure to check out all of the other Irish and international real estate and construction shows here on iPropertyRadio.com.